Hello.
Welcome to Stargaze.
We are so excited to be here. This is a really cool topic, precognition. Gabriella thought of it, and we've been thinking about it for a while, and I'm glad we're doing it now. Because we've been having so many instances that we want to share with you all, and we're signed into the chat if you have anything to ask as we go or any stories to relate. Should we start off with...
Yeah, I want to tell you guys about... Back up to last show, we were talking about reincarnation, and we had a guest, Serene, and she mentioned on the show that after the show, she was going to get a past lives reading from Cheryl Golden Bear, which she did on her birthday, which was the 13th.
Ventura!
Yeah, and she had quite an intense reading about all sorts of things. Even I came up in the reading.
What? Yeah. I didn't hear anything about this.
Yeah, so Serene, the Cheryl Golden Bear told her that in some history, she and I together were in India. We were living in a convent as nuns, but we not for religious reasons, as like a sort of cover for our own political agenda.
Wow.
So we lived our lives as nuns so we can do all this stuff. She had, there were stories about her in spaceships, stories about her having, you know, emotional and physical relationships with people that in our current existence have.
Okay.
Because Sarah and I, like, how? We talked about how it seems like when you have that connection with someone, you feel there's your soulmate, that you have had experiences before, because it's always this immediate response to them, like when you first meet them, and it's like, how could we get all this information from each other,
right?
Our first meeting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know about Cheryl Golden Bear. I haven't met her, and like the legitimacy of her or her methods or what have you, but it was really validating that with the research we did and the things that she reported were so much in line with what we were discussing before it. I don't know. Maybe you and I should go see her.
How did she know that it was you that she spoke of about the...
I didn't ask that. Okay. I just took that she gave her enough explanation to validate that she... Or maybe, you know, she knew specific names. I don't know.
I would love to go check that out. Also, I think that would be a really good stargaze field trip.
Yeah, it would. It was very ceremonial, too. It wasn't sit down and let me tell you. There was
That's all cool.
Things that happened as part of the process. Well, Jesse and I are totally obsessed with ESP.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read books about it as a child. I always thought it would be cool to have ESP and... psychokinesis and everything else, and I always wanted to understand more. So we selected precognition to talk about. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the history and differentiation and some sort of scientific research that's more current and some discoveries made about it.
I'm shaking my head yes.
She's shaking her head
lots
yes.
of yes.
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 Yes. That's what I mean. So, I don't know if Jesse wanted to share that part so we can talk about how we, what are the different types of psi.
So this is, of course, from Man, Myth, and Magic. And man, the cover is of a vampire.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. What a good look. That's totally my look.
People often call me a vampire. Do you know why, Jesse?
No.
Me either.
What? It's just the dark hair.
Well, also, I have a sun sensitivity problem. I can't really go in the sun. But I just... It comes up so often, I'm wondering, is there some vibe I'm putting off like a vampire? I'm just wondering.
Well, maybe of, like, the old, like, Bela Lugosi sort of, like, grandiose, you know, because you're very confident
and
stuff.
I'm blood sucking and eternal, immortal,
eternal. That would be cool. I always try to do the vampire look. Back on track.
I'm not trying though, so that's the thing.
Should I start with this beginning paragraph? Okay, cool. So, one type of extrasensory perception, precognition, or knowledge of the future through dreams is typical of a vast amount of reported human experience. So this is many years patient research into clairvoyance. Precognition and telepathy indicates that extrasensory powers working independently of known physical laws may be common to all mankind and not the prerogative of a gifted few. There is even evidence that animals too may share in these mysterious forces which appear to function at an unconscious level. So the reception of information by a person through other means than the senses is known as extrasensory perception, or ESP. It is thus one aspect of a two-way exchange with the environment that is not mediated by the senses and muscles. This is more inclusive extrasensory-motor interaction is the area of study of the branch of science known as parapsychology, or psychical research. And it is now conveniently identified in common practice by the use of the Greek letter PSI. That's what you were speaking of. Psi. Extrasensory perception is therefore one kind of PSI or psi communication, the other or extramotor part of the exchange being called psychokinesis, the manipulating of matter by mind alone, or PK. Three types of ESP have so far been recognized. That's cool. They were known long before the term extrasensory perception was first used in 1934. Wow, that was a long time ago. Clairvoyance is the ESP of objects or events, precognition, that of future events, and telepathy, the direct experience of another person's mental state. I wonder what they called it before 1934. This is obviously an odd way to divide up the sources from which knowledge might be gained by ESP. That is, into objective events, future events, and the thoughts of other people. Other claims have been made, as, for example, that of retrocognition, the ESP of past events, but it is no basis for acceptance in parapsychology, so like past lives. It is well to remember, however, that ESP may at some later time be subdivided differently than it is at present. The types of human experience represented by these three ESP classifications are not only very old, but broadly distributed throughout the cultures of mankind. One recognizes the similarity of examples throughout very wide distribution, and it goes on.
It does. It's a really dense section of the encyclopedia. I'm going to talk like almost about the same things, but instead of the encyclopedia from 1970, which, you know, doesn't seem very scientific for the most part, it looks like they really did some work on the ESP section.
Yeah.
I'm going to read from an article. This was taken from the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, 2011. And the article is called Feeling the Future, Experimental Evidence for Anomalous Retroactive Influences on Cognition and Effect by Daryl J. Bem, Cornell University.
Cool.
So I'm going to explain how he's pretty much talking about it the same way, even though that was quite a long time ago. So let's moving into the future. The term psi denotes anomalous processes of information or energy transfer that are currently unexplained in terms of known physical or biological mechanisms. Two variants of psi are precognition, defined as conscious cognitive awareness, and premonition, affective apprehension of a future event that would not otherwise be anticipated through any known inferential process. Precognition and premonition are themselves special cases of a more general phenomenon, the anomalous retroactive influence of some future event on an individual's current responses, whether those responses are conscious or non-conscious, cognitive or affective. This article reports 9 experiments involving more than 1,000 participants that test for retroactive influence by time reversing,
well-established psychological effects so that the individual's responses are obtained before the putatively causal stimulus events occur. Data are presented for four time-reversed effects: precognitive approach to erotic stimuli and precognitive avoidance of negative stimuli, retroactive priming, retroactive habituation, and retroactive facilitation of recall. All but one of the experiments yielded statistically significant results, and across all nine experiments. Okay, so I'm going to move down because it's really talking about the study. And then it finishes this paragraph with, skepticism about psi issues of replication and theories of psi are also discussed.
Okay.
So, keywords. So, words we're talking about with everyone. Psi, parapsychology, ESP, precognition, and retrocausation. So, we're going to talk a little more on the modern understanding of psi. The term psi denotes anomalous processes of information or energy transfer that are currently unexplained in terms of known physical or biological mechanisms. The term is purely descriptive. It neither implies that such phenomena are paranormal, nor connotes anything about their underlying mechanisms. Alleged psi phenomena include telepathy, the apparent transfer of information from one person to another without the mediation of any known channel of sensory communication. Clairvoyance, sometimes called remote viewing, and I want to do a show on that.
Yeah.
The apparent perception of objects or events that do not provide a stimulus to the known senses. Psychokinesis, the apparent influence of thoughts or intentions on physical or biological processes. And precognition, conscious cognitive awareness or premonition, effective apprehension of a future event that could not otherwise be anticipated through any known inferential process. So, a little more on what we're talking about.
Please.
Precognition and premonition are themselves special cases of a more general phenomenon. The anomalous retroactive influence of some future event on an individual's current responses, whether those responses are conscious or non-conscious, cognitive or affective. This article reports nine experiments designed to test for such influence by time reversing several well-established psychological effects so that the individual's responses are obtained before the putatively causal stimulus occurs. So, no redundancy there, but the main study that I'm going to share is about precognition and as it relates specifically to something called presentiment.
Yes.
Meaning a response before something happens.
An emotional response.
Because I feel it like really clarifies this whole thing. So, you know, we talk about this all the time, like you anticipate things before they happen, or you get like that premonition, a dream about something and then it happens. Or once I had something, this is very, very significant and powerful. I was pretty young and I had left in my car to pick up a girlfriend.
Okay.
And we were going to this place in Hollywood, which is now called Cheetahs. But it used to be...
What was it before?
Shamrock, it was called. Okay. This is like, you know, a bar where music was played. It
yeah.
was like a little underground, yeah. somewhat kind of like what you think of as DIY today. Like, and I was picking her up and her boyfriend was meeting her there.
Okay.
Okay, and tons of people we knew were going to be there. I left and I started driving and I had the most overwhelmingly terrible feeling of impending doom. Like, it was just awful. And I called her and I said, I can't go. I mean, if you know me, you know pretty much if I'm down for hanging out all night and having fun,
you're
fun's gonna happen.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm the instigator of fun. I'm definitely yeah. the one gonna make sure it happens if anyone's hemming and hawing or something.
Yes.
So it was very dramatic. And she said, okay. And she didn't end up having a ride or going. But her boyfriend went. And he was murdered at that place that night.
And, you know, I wondered that feeling, had she gone, would she have been murdered? You know, what would have been the impact of her being there? Because what happened, happened. The thing that happened was, there was some dude, I think he was like a Marine or something, but came with a gun. And he was picking fights. And someone, he was like, hey, dude, be cool, not knowing he had a gun. The guy took out a gun. He put his hand up and he shot friend's hand. And then her boyfriend, that's no longer alive, went after him, like, to protect other people. Like, this guy has got a gun and is shooting. And he just shot him point blank.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, that experience, you know...
obviously has stayed
with you. Yeah. And I did tell her about it. I don't know if she ever thinks about it. But the emotion that I had was just so powerful. Like, it was crazy. It's like, I cannot go. There wasn't any, like... reason. You know, like, did I leave the stove on? It wasn't right. Like that.
Right.
It was super powerful. Like, I cannot.
Had that happened to you before?
I don't recall ever having that experience before.
And did you discuss that with her?
I mean, back like at ever after the time. That? I mean, this is, like, I'm what, sure maybe crushed. 25, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty devastating, and I'm sure she felt like she should have been there or something.
Right.
But it just seems like she should not have been there to me, which is what that emotion was.
And you made it so.
But I mean, I didn't have a choice. It was just like, it was totally against everything. I was like dressed, ready, on my way.
Right.
Already had people in the car, was getting ready to pick up her, bring the party. Mm-hmm. And just with no explanation, it stopped. So that's premonition. I mean, and it's like memorable because something really big happened, but then there's all those little things.
Yeah.
Like yesterday, I'm just randomly start thinking about a friend that I haven't talked to in a week or two and just called her. And she answers, she's like, oh my God, were you just thinking of me? I'm like, yeah, I was thinking of you, and then I called you.
Yeah.
She's like, because I had just opened my phone and was starting to text you. That is so weird. I didn't think it was weird. I feel like that friends have those, connected people have those kinds of things all the time. You just don't have any, rarely have confirmation that happened.
Yeah, that scares me that I'm so connected to my phone that I'll like look at it and then someone will call. and I wonder if that's me connected to that person. But it's not always
not
like
the
a friend,
phone. I
hope.
It's more of that, you know, feeling right before it happens that it's happening.
Yeah.
And that feeling's really subtle. It doesn't feel really powerful or like impending doom the way I described it, which is much how it feels if you're dying. You have this overwhelming feeling of impending doom, and I'm speaking from personal experience. So it's a very, very strong emotion that not everyone will experience, probably.
Like in Vegas, when I kept thinking, I'm going to use my magical powers to make money.
Yeah.
It worked, but in a totally different way than I had anticipated. Like, so now in Vegas,
yeah,
you have these tickets that print out.
Okay.
You know, it's not like quarters, it's either dollar bills, and then whatever you lost or win, it comes out on this ticket, and then you can cash it in. And I would go and play mostly the slots, like 5 cent, 25 cent, and I'd just lose money really quickly. And I'd get really down, and I'd walk around, and I'd find people's old tickets that they just didn't care about because it was like 43 cents.
Yeah.
So I actually found like 3 or 4 of those, which is weird. It's kind of like this, you know, heat on a chair that someone left for me, you know, but I definitely lost money, and it did not work to my advantage for like making that back or anything. Versus my friend who didn't care about gambling, but was like, yeah, let's try it. You know, we're here. And would just make her money back and then, you know, $5 on top of it, and she would cash out and whatever. And I was wondering what kind of on a tangent, but what our feelings going into this, how that affected the outcome. Because I would talk to myself in my head and say, you know, this one's special, you know, or like, hold on to your special, your power necklace, and then like walk towards one that, and I was trying to force this precognition that was not going to come around because it wasn't my, I don't know, destiny or I didn't really,
luck, it weird. Feels just like that. Mm-hmm. And so does just what you're saying. I play this thing with myself. I do it all the time when I play Sudoku. I like to play like the most complex ones the computer can throw at me. But inevitably, the puzzle becomes unsolvable because it could go either way to that. There's no logical way you could figure out what it is without guessing.
Yeah.
So when it gets to the point of guessing, and I'm like maybe there's a 50-50 chance that it's one or two things, I feel like when I'm about to pick the right one, I know it's the right one.
Yeah.
And when I'm about to pick the wrong one, I know it's the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And it never fails. And I've been trying to train myself.
So you're trusting yourself.
Yeah. Can I follow that trusting of the right versus
and maybe
the wrong?
That's the difference between intuition and precognition that we've been talking about, you know, before the show and stuff. Like, for you, you just let yourself feel that.
Yeah.
Versus me trying to like force that kind of experience.
Right. So let's talk about a little what we were talking about. What Jesse's saying is, before the show, we were talking about intuition. And so for years and years, I always teach, I'm a nurse, so I always teach newer nurses or anyone, especially women, that will listen about the concept of intuition in this way. Mm-hmm. That, for one, I don't like the word because it sounds like you're just a hokey lady. Mm-hmm. And you don't know anything, so you use your feelings to pick things up. However, when you follow your hunches, your gut instinct, everyone knows that's a reality. And any time I've ever done that, followed on what seemed like intuition, because I didn't have any other way to cognitively understand why I needed to take certain actions, why somebody was in healthcare, it's like someone's getting sick or someone's not right, something's not right, and I need to do this particular action, and I can't really explain to you why.
Right.
But that after it happens, you can see there was all sorts of stimuli you were taking in. But you didn't process them in this cognitive way. It was more of a feeling way, and that's what this article talks about. It was effective.
Agreed.
And that's why I love this whole thing on presentiment. And because it's very, very validating. Most of our communication, our language is like super linked to emotion. That's just how the brain is wired. So there's no
which
reason to
me is
to
the
discount
body.
It.
Right. Emotion it's is the body.
And as you know, I believe in the body.
There's this cool quote from this PhD woman and president CEO of some institute I have no idea about. Institute of Noetic Sciences. I'm looking on this website called Collective Evolution. Pretty cool. And she says, there seems to be a deep concern that the whole field will be tarnished by studying a phenomena that is tainted by its association with superstition, spiritualism, and magic. Protecting against this possibility sometimes seems more important than encouraging scientific exploration or protecting academic freedom. But this may be changing. And that's kind of exactly like what...
That's the theme of every one of our shows.
That's true.
Really, that, you know, there were no such thing as witches. It was, like, very purposeful. It wasn't, like, magic at all, even though magic is then the name of our show. And that we feel magical about it because it's special, and it's knowledge we take in or understand in a completely different way than we were told to. In fact, we were told not to take in information in ways that seemed magical or not logical. Yet, at the same time, we live in a society where people are highly religious and believe in things they can't see. So, it's just there's like picking and choosing of what's supposed to be acceptable and what isn't.
Absolutely.
And that's really Jesse and I's pursuit, is that, you know, we're constantly searching for other avenues of experiencing your life and your existence and this earth and humanity in ways that are new to us, because we weren't raised believing them. But like, we love the cultures that are grow up believing in fairies, and it's just mm-hmm. everyone openly accepts that because
go societally, Iceland.
Yeah, go Iceland. Iceland,
so cool.
Let me read about this one experiment by Daryl J. Bem on the presentiment, because it's so, to me, puts into words in this tangible way what I've always felt or suspected.
Hmm.
So I'm going to read much of it, just so everyone can get into it as it's written here in this article. Just as research in cognitive social psychology has increasingly pursued the study of cognitive and affective processes that are not accessible to conscious awareness and control, research in psi has followed the same path, moving from explicit forced choice guessing tasks to experiments using subliminal stimuli and implicit, indirect, or physiological responses. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're not intuiting things. You're just not cognitively aware of how you're processing
it. The processing that we were talking about.
Calling it intuition makes it sound hokey, like you're a hokey lady and no one should listen to you. But yet women are allowed more freedom to experience things and process things in that way.
Right.
So cool for us. All right. The trend exemplified by several recent pre-sentiment experiments pioneered by Radin, in which physiological indices of participants' emotional arousal were monitored as participants viewed a series of pictures on a computer screen. Most of the pictures were emotionally neutral, but a highly arousing negative or erotic image was displayed on randomly selected trials. As expected, strong emotional arousal occurred when these images appeared on the screen. But the remarkable finding is that the increased arousal was observed to occur a few seconds before the picture appeared, before the computer had even selected the picture to be displayed. The presentiment effect has also been demonstrated in an fMRI experiment that monitored brain activity, this is Bierman and Schulte in 2002, and in experiments using bursts of noise rather than visual images as the arousing stimuli. A review of presentiment experiments prior to 2006 can be found in Radin, although there has not yet been a formal meta-analysis of presentiment studies. There have been 24 studies with human participants, blah, blah, blah. Starting to get real scientific and boring. We hate boring. And then 2 studies with animals are positive, 1 marginally and the other substantially. Anyway, so before the computer picked if it was going to show a horror image or an erotic image, the person had an emotional response. And they tested these in different ways by looking at, you know, like with an MRI, like looking at imaging of the brain to see this reaction before it happened.
What country was this?
This, he's from Cornell.
Right,
US.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is American Psychological Association.
We're cooler than we think sometimes.
Very cool.
I have this. I have this really long interview by Philip K. Dick about his mystical experiences. Oh, I thought we could just play a little bit.
See, you are so telepathic because without us even talking about it, much discussion at home
about sci-fi.
Precog and Philip K. Dick specifically.
Oh,
came
really?
Up in preparing
oh
for
my
the show,
God.
Like on and on and on. But I didn't bring any, and I didn't tell you about it.
I love it. Yeah. Well, that's because we're on the same love. Same
yes.
love. Lovey. Okay, let's try it out. Do a little of this. See how this goes. All the wires.
I had finally become half crazed with horror and grief at the state of the world. I was looking for some enlightenment. So In 74, there came upon me at the trough of my life, at the point where I saw nothing but inexplicable suffering, there came to me the beatific vision, which calmed all my sense of horror at the world and my sense of the transcendent power of evil. And on the basis of this vision, we're speaking now of a time slightly over 5 years ago, just a bit over 5 years ago, I set out to write a book in which this was expressed in a way that made rational sense rather than simply mystical sense. That my mystical experience with the beatific vision had to be formulated into some rational structure that could be transferred to other people. What did this amount to philosophically? My mental anguish was simply removed from me, you know, as if by a divine fiat, you know, that God...
This just happened to you on your own?
Yes.
No one else?
Yes, it just happened to me on my own. It was as if the primordial curse or fall had lifted from me, you know, and that I was restored, healed. It was a sort of, you know, intervention of a kind of a psychological, mystical type, which I describe in Valis, my new book. Valis, V-A-L-I-S, it stands for Vast Active Living Intelligence System. What happened was that some transcendent divine power, which was not evil but was benign, intervened to restore my mind, to heal my mind and heal my body and give me a sense of the beauty of the world, the joy of the world, the sanity of the world. And out of this, I forged a concept which is relatively simple and possibly unique in theology. And that is the basis of my insight, and it took me 4.5 years to formulate it after this experience, is that the irrational is the primordial stratum of the universe. It comes first in time, and it is primary in ontology, in levels of essence. And it evolves from irrationality, chaos, and blindness into rationality. That is, the irrational gives birth to the rational. And that the history of the universe is a movement from irrationality, which means chaos, cruelty, blindness, pointlessness, generates evolutionarily a rational structure which is harmonious, which interlocks, which is interlinked in a way where it is orderly and beautiful and harmonious. But that this comes into existence only fitfully, slowly, sporadically, like lightning discharges here and there, that it's not ubiquitous, as I supposed in the novel Ubik, that it's found in Jewish mysticism as it's called the Shekinah, which means divine presence, and the theory is that it's only intermittent and from time to time and from place to place. Now, I conceived of it as evolving out of the irrational, that the primordial creator deity, the way I express it in Valis, is the primordial creator deity was essentially deranged from our standpoint, that we are, as humans, an evolution above the primordial deity. Mm-hmm. We actually stand, it is somebody in the Middle Ages once said, we are pygmies, but we stand on the shoulders of giants, and therefore we see more than they see. We human beings are created, and yet we are more rational than the Creator himself, who spawned us.
What a wonderful idea.
Yeah, and the whole evolution of the cosmos is away from blindness, destructiveness, and the pointless clashing together toward a coherency and a harmonious interrelationship. And so, in the way, I guess, Teilhard de Chardin would be one of the few people, you know, that had this vision where he talks about point omega toward which we're evolving. But I see the rational and benign divine power as a late development in the history of the universe, not as the creator, but as coming onto the scene, finding chaos, finding irrationality, and beginning to organize it into a cosmos. And that in a sense there is a kind of conflict between these two deities, or principles. They could be regarded as the principle of disorder versus the principle of order. But the primary condition of reality is disorder. And out of disorder, order forms. The universe moves from disorder to order. And disorder I equate with evil, and order I equate with the benign. Mm. So what I stipulate in vows is put dramatically this way. The rational bursts into the irrational, invades it, subdues it, and sobers the landscape. My outlook is based on, not on faith, but on the actual encounter that I had in 74 with a mysterious, powerful, rational mind, which was unfathomable to me as to what it was, what it called itself. It seemed to resemble Ubik in many respects. Ubik, the entity that I had written about in the novel by that title.
When you say an encounter, was this sort of a hallucination or a vision or something?
It was an invasion of my mind by a transcendently rational mind. It was almost as if I had been insane all my life, and suddenly I had become sane. Now, I've actually thought of that as a possibility, that I actually have been psychotic until 1974, from 1928 when I was born until March of 1974. But I don't think that's the case. I mean, I may have been somewhat whacked out, you know, and somewhat eccentric for years and years. But I wasn't all that crazy, because I'd been given Rorschach tests and so on. This was a rational mind that was not a human rational mind. It was more like an artificial intelligence. Now, I don't pretend to know what it was. On Thursdays and Saturdays, I think it was God. On Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I think that it was extraterrestrials. Sometimes I think it was the Soviet Union, the Academy of Sciences was trying out their psychotronic microwave telepathic trance. I thought about it. I tried different theories, you know. Yeah. I mean, I tried every theory. I thought of the Rosicrucians. I thought of the Russians. I thought of extraterrestrials. I thought of God. I thought of Christ.
Was this something you heard then, or was it more than that? Just trying to visualize.
Well, it
the experience.
It invaded my mind and assumed control of my motor centers and did my acting and thinking for me.
But you had your own consciousness there as well.
Yeah, but I was a spectator to it. Oh. And it first of all, it set about healing me physically, and my little boy, my little four-year-old boy, had a undiagnosed birth defect. And this mind, whose identity was totally obscured, I even thought I might have been Elijah, it might have been the Holy Spirit. I thought of everything. I all I can say is I don't know, was that it was equipped with tremendous technical knowledge, engineering knowledge, medical knowledge, cosmological knowledge, philosophical knowledge, The first thing that it informed me was to be very wary of heavy metals. And I've even thought that it was one of the great Illuminati of history, one of the great Rosicrucians, like it might have been Paracelsus. I thought for a long time that it might have been Paracelsus. I thought it might be a previous incarnation of myself that had broken through. It had memories dating back over 2,000 years. It spoke Greek. It spoke Hebrew. It spoke Sanskrit. There wasn't anything that it didn't seem to know. It immediately set about putting my affairs in order. It fired my agent. It fired my publisher. It was very practical. It decided that the apartment had not been vacuumed adequately and not recently enough. It decided that I should stop drinking wine entirely because it was a sediment, and it turned out I had abundance of uric acid in my system, and switched me to beer. It made elementary mistakes. It kept calling the dog he and the cat she, which annoyed my wife since I knew and she knew that the dog was a female and the cat was a male. It kept calling her ma'am, and it would lapse into what turned out to be Koine Greek when it would fall into a contemplative state. She recognized it as Koine Greek because she'd taken some Attic Greek in school. I didn't even recognize it as a language. I felt it was just nonsense. It was very intelligent and had a firm and shrewd grasp of business matters. It remargined my typewriter's margining. I even thought it might have been the soul of my friend Jim Pike come back from the dead. I don't exclude the possibility either. Charles, I'm not willing to exclude the possibility that Jim Pike came back to me as his son Jimmy came back to him, because it had a tremendous interest in early Christian theology and in Zoroastrianism, which Jim Pike had confessed to me once he believed was probably the true religion. He was very versed in Zoroastrianism and knew a great deal about the Essenes and the therapeutic.
How did your wife perceive all this? Did you tell her what was going
on? Oh, yes, we discussed it. She was impressed by the fact that because of the tremendous pressure that it put on people in my business, that I made quite a lot of money very rapidly. We began to get checks in for thousands of dollars, money that was owed me, that this mind was conscious existed in New York and had never been coughed up. It also wrote a letter to the Roman Catholic Church, informing the Roman Catholic Church that my writing contained allusions to the New Testament, which were to edify the Roman Catholic Church that a miracle had occurred, and that it was very busy and active. Does this interest you?
I put it
up. Okay. It had one overweening concern. This was in March of 1974. It informed me that a group of conspirators had murdered the Kennedys, Dr. King, and Bishop Pike. That it, the mind that had taken me over, had seen the conspirators. The mind then graphically represented itself as the Cumaean Sibyl.
What's the what?
The Sibyl of Cumaean.
Oh, I'm not... Logical knowledge is not very.
Well, the Cumaean Sibyl was the Roman equivalent of the Delphic Sibyl of Greece. Oh. The Cumaean Sibyl advised the Roman Republic when it was in danger. She had the so-called Sibylline books, which were consulted by the Roman Republic.
Oh,
Well, now I've let it out of the bag, haven't I? It was female. She was female. She had the Sibylline books. She showed me the Sibylline books. She said the Republic was in danger. She meant the American Republic. She said that once again the Empire threatened to take over. she was there to see that the empire was destroyed. I shouldn't be saying this. This is really stupid of me, Charles. I shouldn't be talking
I'll
about
I'll cut
this.
Out anything that you want me
no,
to
No, I don't approve of that. I mean, if I'm indiscreet enough to say it, I don't necessarily want to censor it.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't see it that way. I see it as sometimes you need to think carefully as to what you want to make public and what you don't. And you can't think carefully at the same time that you're talking.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So I you know.
Well, okay, most of it's invalid. She said that the oscillation between the Republic and the Empire was a constant in history. She caused me to see periods in history in which the Empire had been defeated. It took me 5 years to identify one of those periods. It turned out to be the War of the Spanish Lowlands. It turned out to be the beginning of the 17th century in which the Dutch cities broke off from the Holy Roman Empire. She said that that was the situation now in the United States in 74, that the Republic was turning into an empire. Mm-hmm. And she said, and they shall be destroyed, for they are murderers. She then dictated a series of letters to Charles Wiggins. Charles Wiggins was on the House Judiciary Committee, sitting in on the decision as to whether to impeach President Nixon. She said to inform, she would dictate the letters. She dictated a series of letters to Congressman Wiggins. They dealt with constitutional law. I didn't understand the letters. Because they dealt with constitutional law, I know nothing about constitutional law. Later I found out that Congressman Wiggins is such an authority on constitutional law that he was suggested as a possibility for the Supreme Court. He came from Fullerton, which is where I was living, and it was his practice to read every letter that came from Fullerton and to answer it. She revealed to me that she had moved me to Fullerton from Canada so that I could write to Charles Wiggins on the Judiciary Committee while they were sitting in judgment on whether they should vote out a bill of impeachment on President Nixon. She dictated a series of letters informing Congressman Wiggins that he had no loyalty to the President of the United States because the President had violated his oath of office, which was that he would uphold the Constitution of the United States. He had failed to do so. Charles Wiggins did not owe the President any loyalty, citing historical examples. Congressman Wiggins answered each letter in detail, and then she sent the final letter. The letter contained the information of the Nixon transcripts were forgeries. They did not correspond to the Nixon to the tapes. And if the tapes were released, it would show that the transcripts were forgeries. That letter she sent to the Wall Street Journal, which had published an editorial saying that the transcripts showed that Nixon was innocent and that we should believe him when he said that they corresponded to the tapes. She stated that the transcripts were self-serving, were not evidentiary, and that the tapes would show that the transcripts were forgeries. And at that point, she wound down. But by that time, she had gotten me to the doctor. She had had me diagnosed, found a number of physical ailments that I had. My little boy had gone in for surgery and had his birth defect repaired, which was a life-threatening birth defect. It could have killed him at any time. She had everything but paper the wall for the apartment. She told me about the article that would be coming out in Rolling Stone by Paul Williams. She told me that it would change my life.
What was it?
The article in Rolling Stone by Paul Williams about me.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, she told me that would be coming. She said your friend Paul, she showed me the article, yeah. Said your friend Paul will be doing an article about your troubles in Marin County. Mm. Yeah, at that point, Paul hadn't said to me anything about it. Mm. She also said that she would stay on as my tutelary spirit. I had to look up tutelary and know what it meant. She had the unfortunate habit of lapsing into Greek. And then, having healed me, calmed me, she presented me with the beatific vision. She showed me a garden of such beauty that I could not believe it existed. And I walked around it. I was actually in it. She transformed the landscape for me. Palm trees, beauty of its indescribable beauty, just indescribable beauty. And she said, when you get old and are dying, I will come back for you and take you there. But she said, I will not come back until then. He said, I got my, she says, I have to leave now. So, I don't know who she was. She appeared as Aphrodite at one point. At one time, I said, Who are you? Tell me who you are, for God's sake. Tell me who you are. And she said, think of me as Diana. Mm-hmm. She said, for me, everything is permitted. I looked up Diana. She turns out she was the Roman patron god, patroness of slaves. She was loved by the lower class. In addition to all these things, she solved a problem facing me, which was of such gravity that it probably was the greatest crisis of my life. At that point, she described herself as a holy wizard and applied the powers of holy wisdom to the problem. But at another time, she described herself as the spirit of Erasmus. And finally, she said that she was essentially playing a game, that she loved to play games, and that none of the things she had described about herself, her identity, were correct, that I would never know who she was. I heard the beautiful bells in the distance, and whenever, the most beautiful bell. But she finally said that I would never know who she was.
You know, a lot of people, if anyone heard this transcript, which as far as I'm concerned, they weren't, because I regard this as a very special conversation. They would think you were putting me out. I can hear Norman spin around.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I've taken notes on this. And I have almost 500,000 words of notes. When Ballas comes out, see, probably by the time the interview comes out, Ballas will come out. Well, what's the limit? They haven't set a date. They're trying to get a hardcover.
This book is vaguely scheduled for May of Asia.
Well, it's hard for me to say. Because Bannon can publish real fast. I wrote a lot of it up in Ballas.
But is Ballas then a novel or a mixture?
It's a mixture of autobiography, fiction, and dramatic devices from the modern theater, from Pirandello and Barry.
I did enough to read it.
I don't pretend to know who she was. She said conflicting things. I spend between 4 and 8 hours a day doing research in history to find where anybody's had an experience like this. I can't find an example.
I just keep seeing you as being a natural focus for some strange new religions.
She At one point, I was convinced that I was dealing with a computer. I said, would you tell me where you... I said, all right, I'll tell you. I'll make a deal. Will you tell me where you are?
Okay, I'm going to be turning that down. Thanks for listening. I think that was really interesting. Oh, my bad. Super duper. Okay, now we can say goodbye on an abrupt and harsh note, but I will be putting that link on the website, and we have a really cool show, June 28th, Battle Wear for the Everyday Woman, trans and cis women, of course, all inclusive, self-identified woman. It's going to be at Pear Space, 8 p.m. to midnight. We have tarot readings, tooth gems, DJs, paintings, live garb being worn, and lots more. My friend and I did a photo project in Las Vegas, and we're going to be printing our photos on tiny little stickers for you to take home. So we're really excited, and stay tuned for our recap of that event, and I hope you enjoy, and feel free to email us or go on our website, Stargaze, Magic, Meditation, and More on our Facebook, if you want to be involved in any way. Take care.